It's been a while since I've been able to join the ladies' Bible study group, and I'm excited to be back. You know, Pastor Van Gelderen's out of town. He's at a missions conference this week, and that's about all I know. I'm not even sure where. I should probably know, but he's out of town. So I'm happy to be able to be back. These virus limitations recently has limited some of the travel and things, so Pastor's been able to be more regular in here, and that's a good thing. I know I'm a poor substitute, but I always enjoy to come in and visit with you all. We're looking at 1 Samuel 25 today. If you have a Bible with you, that's the text, 1 Samuel 25. And I guess Mrs. Eggert was just telling me that you've been going through a series from that book, so that's fantastic. I would actually love to get in on that and hear some of that. I'm sure it's been great, but a little departure from that today. We'll look at just a text of Scripture, just a chapter there, on Abigail in particular, an intriguing character. So we'll talk about her a little bit. I was just remembering something, if you can spare 2 minutes for a kind of humorous memory. Do you know, we've been doing these ladies face-to-face groups for not quite 10 years, about a little over 9 years now. And I only know that because I was just this morning, I was looking back at some of the lessons that we've had, and it was just surprising. I think it was 2011, after a vacation Bible school outreach during the VBS week. The ladies' Bible study groups had been just really dynamic, and ladies had really enjoyed it, and there had been a lot of feedback about, can we continue on doing this? And so we did. And so I guess next year will be 10 years. That just seems like, wow. It's amazing. It's been going on that long. But what I was going to say, I was remembering this 4 years ago. I don't know if any of you would recall this. 4 years ago, one of the Tuesday mornings, I had a high school group, a group of high school students come in here and present results of a poll that they had taken about the election. Do you remember 4 years ago when it was Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and people had very strong opinions about that whole situation? And so we were discussing that in a high school class, and so the students had taken a survey of something regarding who people were voting for and why they were going to vote the way they were going to vote. And it was right at this time of year. It was just ahead of the election 4 years ago. And they came in and just gave the results of the survey, and we talked a little bit about the election. And that was by far the most tense ladies face-to-face Bible study I've ever been in. As soon as we started talking about politics, it just got tense in here. And that was an interesting time. You remember that, everybody? I mean, this election, this is pretty intense, and people have opinions, but that one was something. That was really interesting. So as soon as I said, this is what we're going to talk about today, about half of the ladies, I just kind of, it got icy. We were just, nobody wanted to talk about it, which I understand. And who wants to talk about politics today? Anyone? No, I didn't think so. So we'll talk about the Bible. How about that? So we're in 1 Samuel 25, looking at the life of Abigail, an intriguing character. Her story here, her history is mostly right in this chapter, and she's mentioned once or twice in a couple other portions, just very briefly, mostly in connection with King David. But right here, her background and her history and her actions, it's a fascinating just as a story, it's intriguing. There's some events in this story that, as you read it, just as a story, it's kind of entertaining and it's interesting, and it makes you question, why did that happen and how did that work out? But Abigail herself, as a character, an interesting character and thought-provoking. I recall overhearing one conversation, in fact, about Abigail where some people were questioning, is she a good character or a bad character? Is she a good example or a bad example? And I thought that was interesting. I had never thought of Abigail as a bad example, and it was interesting to me. Why would somebody say Abigail might be a bad example? What do you think about that? Okay, yeah, exactly. That was the conversation. Should ladies do like that? Is that how, you know, how ladies should conduct themselves? But we'll talk a little bit about that. So Abigail is our character of focus here. Incidentally, who knows what the name Abigail means? Probably someone in here does. Maybe Abigail does over there. Maybe she knows. What does it mean?
It literally
means my father is joy. Yeah, my father in the Hebrew language there. And it's a nice name. It's a pretty name. And we know people named Abigail. And Probably we get that name pretty much just from here, from the Bible story. So we usually ask that question about a character, and we'll ask a few more questions about Abigail. I'll read some portions of Scripture, and then I'll rely on you to give some feedback here and your thoughts, and I think it'll work better if you all chip in and give your thoughts and opinions rather than just listening to me talk. Why don't we start with verse 1? We'll read a few verses from 1 Samuel 25. And Samuel died. So that's the context of the history of Israel here. That's the time period, and David is about to become the official king. He's been anointed, but now he's being pursued by Saul across the wilderness. And so you might say there's a little bit of a leadership vacuum in the nation right now. Saul is the king, but is he doing a great job? No, I couldn't say that. So Samuel died, and all Israelites were gathered together to lament him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran, because he's persona non grata at the king's court there. King Saul doesn't like him at all. And in that context, verse 2, there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel. The man was very great, meaning very wealthy and powerful. He had 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife was Abigail. She was a woman of good understanding and beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb. Now the next few verses here. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep there in Carmel. And David sent out 10 young men to ask Nabal for help and support. And he sent a message saying, David and his men have always supported and protected you, and now we're just asking for some support and some help from you. And the reply was very negative. And Nabal replied and said, verse 10, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays that break away from his master. Shall I take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be?" So David's young men, verse 12, turned their way and went again and came and told him all those sayings. So David asked for a little help, just a little food to support my group here in the wilderness since I've protected you all. Nabal said, "I don't think so. This is my wealth and I'm keeping it for me." Verse 13, David said unto his men, "Gird ye on every man his sword." And that doesn't sound like good news right there. That sounds like there's going to be trouble. And they girded on every man his sword. And David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men. And they left 200 behind to take care of the stuff. So there's going to be a battle now. David's got hundreds of men, 400 men with swords. And they're going to go attack Nabal and his household. And that's a big problem. Let's ask a few questions. Number one. How do you suppose a woman like Abigail got married to a man like Nabal? Help me out, refresh my memory here. This portion says that Abigail was what kind of a person? Good understanding, somebody said. Beautiful countenance. Yeah, the kind of person you'd want to know, you'd want to be friends with, obviously. What kind of a man was Nabal? Churlish, yeah. Yeah, mean. Selfish, and we find out later on in this passage, even foolish, you could describe him with that word. So how did a woman like Abigail get together with a man like Nabal? How do you suppose that happened? Probably an arrangement between two families, and it seems like that happened maybe more frequently back in those days than it does now. Maybe, I don't know, we're using our imagination here, but maybe there wasn't a really deep personal relationship between Abigail and Nabal before they were married. I don't know. But seems like it happened frequently. Does anything like that kind of situation ever happen in modern times, though? Do you ever come across a marriage like that where you find that one of the marriage partners is just the most pleasant person and really nice, and the other one just seems like not a person you want to be around at all? Does that happen sometimes? Happens sometimes. You wonder how did they get together, you know? So there's a definite contrast between these two. I guess that's what we're trying to say. That's just setting the stage for the rest of the story between Nabal on one hand and Abigail on the other hand. They're two different kinds of people. Now, number two, we're going to read a few more verses here. Looking down at verse 14, you know the situation. There's going to be conflict between David and Nabal. Verse 14, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed on them. But the men were very good unto us, and we were not hurt, neither missed we anything. As long as we were conversant with them, when we were in the fields, they were a wall unto us by night and day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined against our master and against all his household. He is such a son of Belial. A man cannot speak to him." What a guy. You can picture this guy, can't you? You just can't even have a pleasant conversation with him. There's no please and thank you when you're talking with Nabal. It's always rough and mean. So verse 18, Abigail made haste. She took 200 loaves, 2 bottles of wine, 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched corn, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on asses. It sounds like Abigail's preparing pretty much what David had asked for originally, just a little provision. Verse 19, she said unto her servants, "Go on before me, behold, I come after you." But she told not her husband Nabal. Okay, question number two, how would you describe the marriage relationship between Abigail and Nabal based on the two portions we've already read up to this point? What do you think it was like? Yes? Distant. Yeah, I think so. Do you suppose every evening they sat down together and had a little heart-to-heart conversation for an hour or two, just shared their plans for the day and their thoughts and things like that? I can't picture it. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really say in the chapter here, but based on what I do read in the chapter, I don't picture that. So distant, that's probably a good word. Another thought to add to distant? Strained. Yeah, you know what it's like when there's a marriage relationship that's strained. And I suppose even the best marriage relationships, at times, there's a little strain and it's tense. But if it just feels like this marriage relationship all the time was tense. There never was a happy day. So it's distant, it's strained. What else? Yeah, for sure. Not a free flow of communication. That's the last portion we read right there. She told not her husband Nabal. All right, since we've read that phrase, why do you think that was the case? Why did Abigail not just tell Nabal what she was doing? I'm going to take this food right here. I've prepared it. I'm just going to take it to David. Oh, yeah. Yeah, what did the servant say? A man can't even speak to him. Can't talk to him. You can't reason with him. Sure. And he would have stopped her. Right. So, frankly, it would have been a bad plan, you know, to just comment to Nabal, "Oh, I'm taking all this food to David." You can imagine how that would have turned out, right? So that's no doubt why she didn't mention it. She was trying to save his life. And he would have stopped her from saving his life. Can you think of anything positive at all about Nabal? Apparently, yeah, that's kind of what I was fishing for right there. He knew how to get ahead. Yeah, he provided for his household. Right? Am I stretching the point, or does that seem like that's really the way it is? Yeah, he got ahead. He was successful financially. He provided for his household. I imagine that some of those rough edges in interpersonal relationships probably was a reflection of his business dealings. Maybe he just knew how to drive a hard bargain, and he got ahead that way. Okay. Yeah, he was consumed with that. That was his whole 100% focus. Getting ahead. Now, do we know any people like that? I mean, do we know any households like that where the man of the house, he does well at what he does? He's in the workplace and he does well at it and he really gives himself to it and he's got quite a drive. Well, I mean, that's to be commended. There's nothing wrong with that. He's achieving something and he's providing for his family. But that's hard for men, though. at times, you know, certain personalities, it's hard for men to turn that thing off when they come home and not be driving and working and focused like that. And it's hard for them to switch from work to home and family. And, you know, sometimes the man of the house is like that. He's kind of hard at home, too, and he shouldn't be. And he thinks he's still at work, and he's carrying all those burdens and pressures right back home with him. And mom feels it, and the kids feel it. And I'm just pointing out, people are people. This was hundreds of years ago. This was thousands of years ago. But human nature hasn't changed, and people are still people. And there are households, even now, we can see that's kind of affected like this. Dad does a great job providing financially, but he's not that great at personal skills and communication and things like that. Number three, what do you think about the way that Abigail described her husband to David? Now, this is an interesting portion, so let's skip down here. Abigail's prepared some of the provisions that David had asked for. She's going to go meet him and try to head off the problem that's coming. There's a storm coming, and David and 400 men are coming through and about to kill all the men in the household. So, they're on their way. You can see that just as she was going, verse 20, David was coming this way as she went out to meet them. And David was determined he was going to go kill everybody, kill all the men. And so verse 23, when Abigail saw David, she hasted and laid it off the ass as she got off her donkey. And she fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground and fell at his feet and said, "Upon me, my Lord, upon me, let this iniquity be. Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let not my Lord, I pray thee," this is David she's talking to, she's calling him my Lord, "don't regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." So that's, again, another character in this story, and Nabal means foolish, so she's just equating, and she's saying he's foolish, just like his name. "But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord whom thou didst send. Now, therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal." Okay, now this is an interesting conversation here, and this, I guess, is the point that we mentioned a couple minutes ago. It's possible somebody could look at the story and say, "I don't know about Abigail. It seems like a bad example." First of all, she didn't tell her husband what she was doing, and it seems like she's going behind her husband's back in that regard. And now she's having a conversation with David, and she describes her husband very frankly, let's say, really frankly, and doesn't leave out any details, you know, describes him just as he is. What do you think about that? Have you ever wanted to have that kind of, you know, conversation with somebody else about your husband? "Let me tell you about my husband." Is this what happens at the ladies' Bible study tables when we're sharing prayer requests? "You know, my husband really needs prayer. He's such a foolish man, and he's really got problems." See, you know, you can see how you would regard that as a negative example, because that's not how we want to be as ladies. Even we know our husbands, all right? They do have problems. Speaking from a lady's perspective, yeah, they've got problems. But we're not trying to share it around to everybody and, you know, air the dirty laundry, right? So what do you think about this? What's going on here? Is that a comment? Yeah. Yeah, okay, she needed to, you say. She had to. If she had, just imagine the story if she had skipped all that. Okay, so how would it have turned out different? Why do you say she needed to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Yep, she's trying to solve a problem at this point. Yes.
I think that when she says that he was Belial, I think that refers back to she had to, it was for their own protection.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was not putting them out for the slaughter.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas she understood really what was going on, and
Yeah, she was saving her husband's life, and she was saving other innocent lives too, including these other servants who had been there. One of the servants had overheard this conversation. He didn't deserve to be killed, but that's what David and his men are getting ready to do. And there's two times in this chapter specifically when David says, I'm going to kill all the men. He doesn't mention the women. He says, we're going to kill all the men of the household. So consider that. Consider what Abigail's position was. She was not acting in a selfish manner. If she was just out to get revenge on her husband and to get rid of her husband, even to see her husband killed, you know, the very best course of action for her would have been to stay home and do nothing and just watch the situation play out. Her husband would have been killed by David and the other servants as well. So what she's doing is rescuing her husband here. The way she's speaking is actually part of the rescue process. Other thoughts? Somebody over here, yeah. Why do you say that?
Because she didn't want him to do something that was against the Lord.
Okay.
And he was part of the problem.
Yes.
Was right.
Right. Absolutely. And this is what I'd love for you to see here is just the heading of the paper where it says she's an intercessor. Abigail is such a great example of intercession in this passage. First of all, see the way that she starts this conversation. The Bible describes really explicitly how she conducts herself. She gets off of her donkey. She falls down on the ground. I think it repeats that expression three times. She's getting down on the ground. She's kneeling before David. She's not in a position of looking for revenge or anything like that. She's not making plans with David. Here's a great idea. How about you just kill my husband and then you and I can get married? Which, incidentally, that's the way the story turns out. They do get married, but that's not the conversation. She's presenting herself as a servant. She refers to herself as a servant. She says, I'm your handmaid. And then the very first words out of her mouth is, let this sin be upon me. She takes responsibility for the sin. She was completely innocent, right? She didn't do any of these bad things or say any of these things that her husband had said. She said, I'm taking the responsibility for that. That's why I'm here with all this food. That's why I'm kneeling right here. I'm going to be the go-between. And as you mentioned, David is in a tough spot too because he's been anointed to be the king. What would have happened in David's life if he had slaughtered a whole bunch of innocent men at this point? He would have been in a bad position. Could he have even taken the throne with that kind of murder on his hands? You know. Yeah. So she's a go-between. She's yes. Absolutely. And we're going to see what's going to happen here when David decides to listen to her and he says, okay, you're right. I was wrong. I'll back off. Then God can step in and handle the situation. And that's a great principle for us to remember. The more we take things into our own hands and defend ourselves and take actions in defense of ourselves in a selfish way, the less God can do for us. But the more we surrender that thing and whatever the hurt is or the problem and give it to God, the more He can step in when we're not in the way. And that's the way this thing turns out. God steps in, justice is served. Everything works out fine, but if it had not been for Abigail's actions in those five verses right there, it would have been a whole different story. So she made the difference here.
Yeah,
that's right. Right. Yeah. Right. No, she was doing the right thing. As it turns out, we'll just cut to the chase here. What Abigail's doing at this point is the right thing. And she's saving her husband's life by making a full confession on his behalf. See, a good-hearted man can say bad things and make bad decisions, but he's going to realize it later on, and he's going to say, oh, that was wrong. I'm sorry. you know, and he'll apologize. Nabal's not going to do that. Abigail is doing on his behalf what he should have done. He should have come and said, I'm sorry, it was foolish, I did the wrong thing, I apologize. Abigail had to name the sin. You can't, don't you teach your kids this? You can't just say in general, I feel bad about something, or I feel sorry, or something like that. You got to ask forgiveness for whatever the actual sin was, and that's the best way to seek restitution, to actually name the sin and say, I did this, it was wrong, and will you forgive me? And that's exactly what Abigail's doing. She's not glossing over anything. She's saying, this is what he did wrong. It's my sin. I take responsibility, and please forgive us. So it's a great example. Good example of intercession. It's kind of like, you know, Daniel praying to the Lord and saying, we have sinned. And you think Daniel didn't sin. It was the other people. But he said, I'm going to pray about it. I'm going to intercede. Just exactly like Jesus, of course, Jesus Christ, who took all of our sins upon him, and he paid the penalty for our sins. He didn't deserve it. It wasn't his price to pay. He went ahead and paid the price on our behalf. And that's this right here is a beautiful example of Christ in this woman, Abigail. We've covered some of these points, really. The next point here, how did she reveal her love for Nabal? And point number four, question number four, we discussed it already. She identified with his sin. She said, that's my sin, and that iniquity is upon me. Number five, Abigail understood how men think and act. How important it is a woman develop this knowledge? Why is knowledge like that hard to acquire and use? How about let's leave that for table time, all right? That might be a good discussion for table time for later. Number six, in this story, what? No, I don't want to be in the middle of that conversation. Might be embarrassing for some of us. It's a good question, though. It's a good discussion. Number six, which one of those two men were in great danger of acting wrongly? Well, we discussed that, too, didn't we? Nabal's life is about to be destroyed, and David's life and career is about to be destroyed, too, by both of them acting foolishly and reacting, and Abigail saved both of them at the same time. And number seven here, compare the two husbands, Abigail's two husbands. As it turns out, Abigail ends up marrying David. So let's see the end of the story. Skipping ahead here. Verse 35, David decides, I will not go ahead and kill everyone in your household. So David received of her hand that which she had brought and said unto her, go up in peace to thy house. I have hearkened to thy voice and have accepted thy person. So Abigail came to Nabal. Behold, he held a feast in his house like the feast of a king. Nabal's heart was merry within him. He was very drunken. There you go. There's another one to add to the list. Wherefore she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light. But it came to pass in the morning when the wine was gone out of Nabal, his wife had told him these things. Now, that's interesting too. She didn't keep it a secret from him forever, as some might say. Well, she went behind his back. It turns out she did tell him, here's what I did. I just saved your life, you know. David was getting ready to kill you, and that's the first time he heard about that. His wife told him all these things, and there's a whole lesson right there, ladies, isn't it? There's timing sometimes when we want to talk to our husbands. There's a good time to have that conversation, and there's other times it's not as good to have the conversation. All right, table discussion. You can talk about that. So what happened? His wife told him these things, and his heart died within him and became as a stone. And it came to pass 10 days after the Lord smote Nabal that he died. And David heard that Nabal was dead. He said, blessed be the Lord that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal. So God took care of that situation when David said, I am not going to take the matters into my own hand. And he kept his servant from evil. The Lord hath returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. Notice that phrase. He said, David said, Jehovah has kept me from doing evil. Who was the human being who kept David from doing evil? Abigail. And she was doing Jehovah's work right there. She was an instrument in God's hands. And so, verse 40, David sent messengers, and they came to Abigail in Carmel, and they said, David sent us to thee to take thee to him to wife. And she arose and bowed herself on her face and said, Let thine handmaid be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. And she's still humble and so forth. And verse 42, she went to David and became his wife. So, all right. Just to wrap up here. Both Nabal and David could be considered desirable husbands, but for different reasons. Right? Nabal could be considered a desirable husband, maybe because of his prosperity and his wealth, his place in the world. David at this time, if you choose to look at it from a secular perspective, he really had nothing. He's running. He's a fugitive from the law. That's kind of what Nabal said about him. Well, he's just a servant who's broken away and left his master. You could choose to look at it like that, but he had a spiritual anointing. And which one of those is most important? All right. We'll wrap it up right there. You can go back to number 5, discuss that a little bit at the table time for a few moments. And just remember, ladies, you have a wonderful, wonderful privilege. The ladies are ladies who have a relationship with a man, they have the opportunity to make that man a better man. Isn't that the case? I think I would say that a lot of the positive qualities that I may have as a result of my wife and her support and her prayers, I think any good man would say that. And that's a wonderful ministry. So ladies have a great opportunity in that regard.